In this public hearing on House Bill 2488, I'd like to welcome you all this evening. Nice of you to come out and speak to us. I would like to start out this evening with just brief introduction, since there's a lot of you out there. Maybe you'd like to know who we are, so I'm going to start over here and ask each of my colleagues to identify themselves by where they come from.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Brad Witt. I'm a state representative from House District 31, and my district includes Sobey Island and then goes along Highway 30 and the Columbia River from Scappoose out to Astoria.
I'm Larry Galizio, state representative, House District 35, which is the Tigard area and a little bit of southwest Portland.
Representative Max Sumner, Malala, Colton, Estacada, Mount Angel, Silverton.
I'm Peter Buckley, representative from House District 5, which is Ashland, Talent, Phoenix, Jacksonville, a little bit of West Medford, a little bit into the Applegate Valley to Rouge.
I'm Representative Sal Escobar from District 6, which I have some rural representation as well. 17 people live outside the city limits of Medford. That's my rural constituency. But other than that, they're all in Medford.
I'm Representative Kevin Cameron. First day on the job today, actually. Thank you. Our district is District 19 here in Marion County, South Salem, Almsville, Turner, and up the east side of Cordon Road.
Welcome to him. I asked if there were any parties in his honor today. He said no, and I said, then guess where you're going to be tonight?
Party with you all.
I am the chair of this committee. My name is Vicki Berger. I represent a part of the Salem area, specifically West Salem, parts of South Salem, Monmouth, and Independence. And seated next to me is Kara Fisher. She is our committee administrator and does a lot of work around here for all of us. And over there is Linda Gatto, who is our committee assistant, and some other folks who are going to help us out. Before we start, I'd like to take time to just set a few ground rules so we're all on the same page and things will go fairly smoothly. I wasn't sure how many would be here. It looks like we're going to have time for I'm not as concerned about time. If we fill this room, there's another room that we will use, and then there will be a visual piped in. So if you have to go to the other room, you'll see what's going on in this room. Those of you who walk in later want to sign up, there will always be a sign-up sheet, and that will be brought forward. We will generally take things in order. I've sort of asked for a 3-minute limit on testimony with sort of a signal up here from Kara when you get it 3 minutes. We won't pull the hook until about 4 minutes, but if you get too much beyond that, I don't want to have to pull the hook. I want everyone to speak, but we'll kind of give you a heads up when we're getting to a time frame where you need to kind of finish your sentence and move on. If you just agree with something somebody else said, you can come up here and say just that and no more. That would be fine and be brief. We like that. I will try and call you up a few at a time and kind of keep track of who's on deck so you know when you're coming up and be prepared so we don't have a lot of lag time. I'd like to remind you this is a public hearing. It is not a rally. We don't care what your opinion is of the speaker's opinion. In other words, there will be no clapping or other indications of either approval or disapproval. You are all here to be heard, and we respect all of your opinions. If you're not used to the microphone, don't be too concerned. They're very sensitive. You don't need to put your lips up right next to them. Sit there at that seat and speak to us as if you were speaking to your friends in your own living room. And if we're having problems recording it, Linda will signal me and we'll make adjustment. But don't feel that you have to be intimidated by a microphone. It's pretty straightforward. And I'm the lady with the big gavel here, and that gives me one piece of power. As some have already discovered, I don't like cell phones. So now would be a really good time for you to check your cell phone, either turn it off or put it on mute, because I will embarrass you if it goes off in the middle of this hearing. It's just a kind of a personal thing of mine. Representative Esquivel.
Madam Chair, I just want to let you know I did pass out your cell phone number to everyone in the
office. Won't do any good because mine's turned off up in my office. I don't even bring it with me. Okay, with that as preamble, I would like to call the committee's attention to things that we have received since we last met. This is our second hearing on this issue. We had one Tuesday morning. ODOT has provided further background, some questions that we asked after the last hearing. Department of Human Services has also provided further information. Mr. John Powell has, would like to have been here but is sick but has dropped off some things. And Representative Witt, you had...
Yes, Madam Chair. I had written testimony that I'm submitting on behalf of Roger Tower, 82148 Walton Road, Seaside, faxed date of February 17th, 2005.
Thank you. And that is all at your desk. Any of you who have anything written that you would like to submit, please submit it over here to our committee administrator, and she will see that it's distributed to us. With that, we will start, and I'm going to ask first Bonnie and John Hawkins to come up. Oh, one other thing I forgot to warn you. We ask that you give your name when you first sit down. Identify yourself simply by name.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Madam Chairperson and members of the committee, my name is Bonnie Hawkins. I live at 5539 Bellflower Court, Southeast, Salem, Oregon. I wish to testify in opposition to House Bill 2488. I know that most bikers feel that they should have the right to ride a motorcycle without wearing a helmet if they want to, and if they die, that would be their problem and should not concern anyone else. And I know that's what my brother thought, too. He actually believed that if he didn't wear a helmet and had a bad accident, he'd be better off because then he would die instead of sitting in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. And that's what he told us, that he'd rather be dead than to be badly injured, and that's the reason he gave for not wearing a helmet. I'm sure there are people in cars who would rather not wear their seatbelts, too, but there is a law that makes us do it, and I'm glad of it because otherwise I might not do it. What my brother didn't realize is that without the helmet, he was exposing his brain to serious injury, and the brain controls everything else. And what he also didn't know is that his entire family would have to pay dearly, both emotionally and financially, for his decision not to wear a helmet. And he didn't think about the bills that would have to be paid by taxpayers as well as his family, and that it would go on for many, many years. My brother Tom was 19, but he would have felt the same way if he'd been 21 or even 31. He lived in California where there was no helmet law in 1968. It is now 37 years later, and he sits in a wheelchair, not because there is anything wrong with his legs, but because his brain cannot function enough to make him walk. And he cannot speak or remember anything or work or play. When you lose your brain, you lose everything. A motorcyclist has no chance against a car. Tommy was not the only one who was hurt that day. His mom and dad, his sisters, and his wife, all of us paid a high price for his decision. His family and the taxpayers paid for the medical care he needed then and would always need, 24 hours a day, and that he continues to get even now. You can imagine the cost of his care. I stopped counting. His friends who rode with him were never there for him. It was his family who stayed with him and took care of him. The emotional toll is also tremendous. After my mother died, my husband and I took care of Tommy for 6 years in our home. When I look at my brother and I see his distress because he has no control over his bowels or bladder, I can tell you that the Tommy I knew would hate to live this way. And I too hate to see him living this way, but our choices are gone. No one ever thinks this will happen to them. They believe they have the right to roll the dice and take their chances. But what they do not seem to know is that they are making a decision that will greatly affect many other people besides themselves. So I believe if there is anything at all that we can do about it, that we must do it. We must make that decision for them, no matter what their age might be, by making sure that at the very least, they wear a helmet.
Thank you. Mr. Hawkins, do you have anything?
No.
Thank you very much. Mr. Melvin Yeager, followed by Andy Easton.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mel Yeager from Albany, Oregon. I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you very much for this entire committee being here tonight and giving us this second opportunity to testify in our behalf. You have in front of you a written testimony, and so I'm not going to go over it point by point, but I do want to expound the fact that I've been working with the motorcycle organizations to further motorcyclist rights for many, many years. And we have done many studies. We've listened to statistics from other states and have determined unequivocally that a helmet is not necessarily a good piece of safety equipment. We feel that in many instances the helmet can cause a death as well as prevent an injury. We have instead in the motorcycling organizations turned our attentions to education. We educate ourselves by going to Team Oregon courses on a periodic basis. We also teach motorcycle awareness in the public schools and driver's education program. ABATE of Oregon finances this program entirely, and it's done by motorcyclists who volunteer their time to go out to the driver's ed classes and teach the courses. We have seen a dramatic drop in helmet deaths, if you want to call it that, or motorcycle deaths, motorcycle injuries, since the inception of Team Oregon training and the motorcycle awareness classes that started in 1992. My partner and I put this class together from just an idea. And we have, my wife and I, just the two of us together, teach probably 550 kids a year in the Salem, Albany, Lebanon area on how to drive and how to look for motorcyclists and why it's important. Now, the death rate has dropped pretty dramatically in that time frame. And although our proponents would like to say that it's, or our opponents would like to say it's the fact that the helmet is saving all these lives, is not indeed a fact. It's education that's doing it. A helmet can prevent an injury after the crash or during the crash, but it can't prevent the accident from happening in the first place. So our thoughts as motorcyclists is, if the helmet is a maybe good piece of equipment, as testified in a previous hearing, 40% of the time the helmet was effective in preventing an injury. What about the other 60% of the time when it wasn't? Now, how about the times when a helmet could cause an injury? We want to say, if we have a balance here where it could be good, could be bad, let us make our choice whether to use it or not. We also equate this to the public telling a pilot of an airplane how to fly his airplane and what to wear when he does it. And I thank you very much, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Yeager. And we did hear a very compelling testimony about the Team Oregon effort. And thank you for that. Any questions? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Andy Easton and you guys.
Oh, man.
Rot Path.
No testimony.
No testimony. Okay. Steve Sweat. Okay. That's. Hi.
I'm Andy Easton, representing the Oregon Medical Association this evening.
will be just a little bit like that. There you go. That's fine.
Do I need to reintroduce myself?
No. You can. I think you're fine.
You guys have a copy of my testimony in front of you. You also have a copy of a letter submitted by Dr. Derek Stables. The OMA opposes this bill. We have historically opposed this bill over the years. I do want to bring to your attention that in 1988, the Argonians overwhelmingly approved the referendum supporting a mandate for motorcycle helmets to be worn in it by a 2-to-1 margin. In a letter that then-Governor Kitzhaber wrote, vetoing a bill in 1997, he stated, "Research clearly demonstrates that motorcycle helmet laws save lives, prevent injuries, and save public dollars." In research that we have done recently, according to the advocates of the highway and auto safety, almost 50% of motorcycle crash victims have no private health insurance, and their medical bills are paid from by Medicare or other public assistance funds. We believe, the OMA believes, that by repealing this bill, there will be a fiscal impact. Oregon helmet laws have saved lives, prevent injuries, and have saved public dollars. Any questions?
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Andy, we had written testimony that was given to the committee that suggests that the average hospitalization cost for acute care of traumatic brain injuries from motorcycle accidents, the hospitalization costs average over $34,500 per. Do you have any sense of whether that would account for all of the medical care, or would there be subsequent medical care after hospitalization?
I would assume that would be just the immediate health care cost, that $34,000. I would also assume that there is probably extensive costs that go beyond that. Mm-hmm. But I can look into that for you and get back to you with that information.
Maybe with some figures, if you could find some.
I can definitely do that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions? Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Steve Sweat, and then Golda Red Ayres. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Steve Sweat, and I came over from Bend. And I noticed there's no representative from the east side of the state, so hopefully I can speak for most of my fellow riders in Central Oregon. I feel strongly in support of this bill. It's a it's not just a choice, but it's a freedom that I think we've been losing with legislation, not only in the federal level but also on the state levels. I'm 55 years old. I've been riding for a number of years. I'm an intelligent individual. I have a college degree, and I think it should be my freedom to whether decide to wear a helmet or not. I don't feel somebody should tell me that I have to do this. And there are unfortunate people who have had accidents by not wearing a helmet, but that is also part of life. So I just like to have your vote to give us our freedom back that hundreds of thousands of our sisters and brothers have lost their lives for. Thank you.
Questions of Mr. Thank you, and thank you for coming over from the other side of the mountains. Did you ride a motorcycle over? Golda Ayres, and then Al Sims.
No. Howdy, Madam Chair. The rest of you guys, senators, I think y'all are.
No, representatives, but close enough.
But that sounds great, though.
Your government, and I'm public. My name's Golda Ayres. I go by Red, and it used to be that color. I'm 56 years old and been riding for over 40 years. I was a Team Oregon motorcycle safety instructor for 3 years. And I doubt any biker behind me here, if they knew he was going to crash tomorrow, they'd say, I need to put my helmet on. But we don't ride to crash. When was the last time you can remember hearing of an accident where two motorcycles ran into one another? Not much. It's cars that are violating our space that cause the majority of motorcycle accidents. Once in a while, a biker will get drunk and ride when he shouldn't and run off a corner. The majority of the time, it's cars getting in our space. That's the reason we agree with Mel that driver education and motorcycle awareness is what's saving our lives, not the helmet. If we was going to really worry about our safety in a helmet, it needs to be a full face. These little half ones are not doing much, but they fulfill the law. But the law's not protecting us. We're just doing it because we were told to, and you know, if you had a full face, it might help you. But halves are not doing much. I'm certainly not trying to get you to overturn those, but seems our three western states here are the only states that are close to us that have a helmet law right now. Idaho and Colorado, no helmet law for any age. The rest of these states I'm going to read to you, another 10, are 18 and under. Hawaii, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, New Mexico, Wyoming. All these people ride freedom of choice. I rode for years here in Oregon before you repealed the law and then passed the helmet law. Usually always had a helmet tied to the back of the bike. I've been riding in the gorge when that wind's gusting and you're going around corners and you voluntarily pull over and put a helmet on because this is blowing you around and it's dangerous. But riding by my own on a back road or on a city road, running across town to go to the grocery store, which is probably the most dangerous part of the trip, and most happen within 5 miles of home, I ought to be able to ride around the corner to 7-Eleven without sticking the thing on. It's my choice again. For the first lady that testified, I am truly sorry for her brother's condition. As a fellow biker, I feel he's my brother too. I've lost people to motorcycle accidents. And we've all lost in the car accidents, but we still allow cars on the road. 2,000-3,000 pounds of machinery. Now we got SUVs that are running around destroying all the cars they hit. And, you know, if we all went to motorcycles and looked more like Japan running around on 50cc bikes around here, we'd probably save more lives than helmet laws and seat belts and airbags are doing.
Mr. Ayers, we're running out of time.
Yeah. That's about it. This is my first time up here to see what's going on, and here I am talking, and I appreciate your time.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Ayers, you have a question from...
Red, I maybe this isn't the place. I'm not real clear on all the details of the bill, but... are motorcycle riders required to carry insurance, like motor vehicles? Does that insurance include, like in motor vehicles, medical insurance for medical accidents?
I'm not sure about that part. Okay. I did call my insurance carrier to find out that they don't have an exclusion on mine. That's another bill we're working on.
But automobiles, we do require medical insurance. Motorcycles, we don't. Okay.
Well, I think that insurance is required on your damage to somebody else's body. Right? That's the mandatory part. When you insure yourself, it's optional.
Thank you.
Representative, we can get that information for you, and perhaps someone will testify on it later. Representative Sumner has a question. Red, you're still in the hot seat. You guys are settled in, and we won't seem to let you out.
Thank you, Representative. Red, thanks for coming. Appreciate you being here. In the event that this bill is passed and you can lawfully take your helmet off, you going to still keep teaching them motorcycle safety course?
I haven't taught motorcycle safety for a couple of years.
Well, I've heard a lot of other testimony from people that are involved in coaching young people generally about the safety factors in riding a bike. Will that stop when the motorcycle helmets come off?
The teaching of safety?
See a lot of heads saying.
No, Team Oregon's going to continue to teach motorcycle safety. Anybody that hasn't rode and decides they want to surely should take that course before they ever hit the street.
Thank you, Red. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
You're off the hook. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Al, I think I got it right, Sims, yes. And Rex Jameson is on deck.
Well, good evening, everyone. I really do appreciate you coming to hear an important issue to us. My name is Al Sims. I'm from Albany. I take motorcycling very seriously. My first paying job, I traded a summer of hauling hay for an old Honda 90 and back in 1969 just so I could get started, and I've come a long way since then. But one thing that I'd like to bring to your attention, I did some research. I'm sorry I didn't make enough copies for everybody, but I found some National Safety Council information. The last stuff I could find was in 1996, and let me just read one quick little paragraph out of here. Motorcycles represent just 2% of the vehicles in the United States. With an estimated 4 million on the road out of a total vehicle population of almost 197 million. So that's 4 million motorcycles, 197 million total vehicles. Out of that number, motorcycles account for less than 1% of accidents and under 6% of vehicle fatalities. Compared to the overall fatalities from all causes in the United States, motorcycles account for only 0.1% of the total. So I'm not trying to make light of this, but what I'm trying to make a point about is that it's 0.1% here. Maybe there's other places we should be focusing. You know, the time and effort that you guys put forth, I think there's better places we could spend this. Compare the 2,500 motorcycle fatalities with 720,862 deaths from heart disease in 1996. And you can make a pretty good case to say that riding a Harley is better than eating a McDonald's cheeseburger every day for 20 years. Maybe we should be looking at this a little differently. Okay, on enough with numbers. You guys have heard enough stuff. Let me tell you about what your other legislators are doing in other states, okay? There's the map right there. You can see the yellow states have no helmet law. The red states have helmet laws. The black states have restricted the helmet laws. Oh, you have to be over 21, basically, or carry an extra amount of insurance or something like that. There is a restriction. But there's only 20 states left in the United States that have a full helmet law like Oregon has. Okay, so what I'm saying with this is that I'm not asking you to break new ground. I'm not asking you to go somewhere nobody's ever been. Oregon is famous for allowing people to make their own choices. We have an assisted suicide law, or nobody has. We have a medical marijuana law, nobody has. Why do we still have a law that inhibits our freedoms in this way? So I would just like you to think about that, that if there was an issue, if the laws were changed and suddenly deaths went way up, I believe that the representatives from most other states would jump right in and change something. They haven't. There must be a reason. If things were getting out of hand, they would be doing something. If their medical expenses were out of sight and their budget for that was gone, they would have to do something about it, and they haven't. So I fully believe that the other states have set a good example for where Oregon should go. We should not be in the minority holding down our constituency. We should be in the majority, you know, allowing our people the freedom to choose. Thank you very much.
Al, thank you. And are there questions? Yes.
Madam Chair, Sims, from your research, can you tell us which states might have restrictions that are based on insurance?
Yes, I can. Let's see. It's actually a little bit hard to read. Insurance requirement. Texas, Florida. It's the only two on the map.
Alrighty.
But they have done that. They've asked for extra insurance in the case that you were injured, you would be covered yourself. I carry an extra rider. My wife and I each have $1 million extra just medical coverage, which I think is smart because of incidents that can happen. And it is out there available to be purchased. I didn't know until you brought it up that it's not required, to be honest, you know, medical coverage for yourself. So that's a good thing. I was doing something good before I even knew it.
Al, if you would like to give copies to Melissa here, she will make copies.
Okay, thank you very much.
And distribute it to the.
Okay, I really appreciate it.
Wait a minute, we've got more questions.
Yes, one question.
Yes, sir.
I should tell you, although I haven't ridden a motorcycle in a while, I rode a motorcycle for 8 years.
Oh, cool.
And it's my favorite form of transportation, uh-huh. And I love motorcycles.
Yeah.
Having said that,
yes.
Could you describe for me what you perceive as the burden of the helmet? In other words, is it uncomfortable for you? I mean,
well,
what is the
helmet, in many ways, the helmet, it is uncomfortable. It does limit your vision. It limits your, you know, a fairly full helmet limits your peripheral vision, your hearing, your balance. I feel like all of those are issues. I've ridden a lot. My wife and I ride 8,000 miles a year plus. And I've ridden in states, a lot of states that don't have a helmet, and I feel much safer riding along that way because I have all my faculties. I'm not limited, you know, by something that is forced upon me. So that's one reason I feel strongly that this should be a freedom of choice issue. And that is what this is, freedom of choice. This is not outlawing helmets. Nobody's saying you can't wear one if you want one. So I like to make that real clear, too.
Thank you.
Further questions, Al? Yes.
Yes.
Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Al?
Yes.
I didn't catch your last name.
Sims. S-I-M-S.
Yes. Al, how much, just out of curiosity, do you know offhand how much it costs you for that $1 million?
You know, I honestly don't, but I tell you the truth, it wasn't that much extra. I mean, once you have the policy, these riders are not that unreasonable. That was another thing that surprised me, to tell you the truth. I thought it would be very expensive because I thought there would be so many terrible injuries that State Farm would be paying out more than, you know, Hurricane Andrew for claims. And all of a sudden, well, they're selling it to you pretty cheap. Well, I'd say from the economics I learned that means they're not paying out a lot, you know. So I'm hoping that that's true. You know, I'm hoping I never have to use it or my wife, but I feel better having it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Al, if you would put your name on whatever it is that you submit,
yes.
So that we know that it came from you, and
yes.
We will try and get copies
okay.
of these kinds of things to the committee.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rex Jamison is next, and Bill Olson is on deck. And anyone who else would like to testify, please sign up on the sign-up sheet over here, and we will take you in order. Welcome.
Good evening, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Rex Jamison. I'm 63 years old. I've been riding for 35 years. The current motorcycle I have, I've put over 150,000 miles on. And several of those years were ridden without helmets, some with helmets. So I believe I have a pretty good perspective from both sides of the issue. Representative Galizio brought up, or maybe it was Representative Witt that asked the question a minute ago about the uncomfortable or about other negative issues of helmets. I'd like to expound on that just for a minute. One of the biggest things to me about the helmets, especially if you wear the three-quarter or full coverage helmets, is that we lose our directional hearing. And someone who's never rode a motorcycle maybe doesn't understand the value of that. But directional hearing is very important to our defensive riding abilities. We need to know more than just whether that sound comes from the right or the left. We need to know whether it comes from behind us, below us, or what. It may be a wheel bearing in our motorcycle that's threatening to lock up, which we wouldn't maybe be able to know that if we couldn't tell what direction that sound comes from. And if that wheel locks up and we're in traffic, we're going to go down and get run over. We need to know what direction traffic is coming up on us from. From behind is our most vulnerable area, being run into from behind, run over from behind. And directional hearing is very important in being able to know those things. the weakest point in our skeletal structure is where our skull attaches to the top of our spine. And coincidentally, that happens to be right at the same place where the back of that helmet comes to. And if you get run into from the rear, which happens quite often with motorcyclists, while we're sitting at a stoplight or a stop sign, somebody doesn't pay any attention and runs over us from the back. And the whiplash effect, that helmet doesn't move exactly in time with your head. It lags behind a little bit, and your head reaches full extension, and then the weight of that helmet comes and snaps back. And that's why a lot of motorcyclists get broken necks in collisions like that. So helmets sometimes do have negatives. Also, the wind fatigue factor is very important. It's not an issue for riding around town or from one town to the neighboring town, but if we get out and ride on the road, which a lot of us do in the summertime here, we're caged up in the winter, so we like to get out and take trips in the summer. And when you get out on the highway and you ride for 200 or 300 miles a day and you're fighting that wind pushing against that helmet, it causes neck fatigue, and that can be can cause lack of concentration, which is not good. We need to have all of our facilities about us. Another thing too is the heat. Whenever in the summertime when it's hot, our body gets rid of the majority of its heat through the top of our head. When you've got a helmet on, you inhibit that, and it's proven through research that whenever your brain is overheated, it causes vision problems, motor control problems, eye focusing problems, various other things, which are all negative toward motorcycle riding abilities. The National
You're getting close to the hook point.
Okay. I apologize.
No, that's fine. I'm just giving you a heads up.
I'd just like to say that I believe that motorcyclists are intelligent people, and they know better how to decide what is safe and what is not, rather than the people who have never ridden trying to tell us how they know better than we do. That's my main point. That goes beyond personal rights. That goes to my safety as a rider. I'd be glad to take any questions.
Questions? Mr. Jameson. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bill Olson from the Brain Injury Association of Oregon, and then Christine Chin Ryan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee. My name is Bill Olson. I'm the advocacy chair of the Brain Injury Association of Oregon. And the association, as you might suspect, does oppose House Bill 2488. The reasons for our position may be summarized briefly, I believe. And I've submitted a letter that lays it out, so I'll try to be very quick here. The data that I have seen, and I haven't done any individual studies, nor have we as an association, but the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has done substantial studies, and their data indicate that protective helmets are effective in preventing death and traumatic brain injury due to motorcycle accidents. They cite helmets were 35% effective in preventing death and 67% effective in preventing brain injuries. It's a study cited 1996 to 1998. The same data show that per vehicle mile traveled, motorcyclists are much more likely to die or be injured than passenger car occupants. The second point is traumatic brain injury can result in long-term disability. I don't think I need to go any further with that. You've heard very persuasive testimony on that score, although I do have personal family experience along those lines, not from a motor vehicle or motorcycle accident, however. Because of the high lifetime cost of care that can be associated with a severe brain injury, the cost burden is inevitably too much for a family to bear. We're talking sometimes in the millions of dollars, $1 to $2 million lifetime, depending obviously on when the individual is hurt. The acute care costs, and those were the costs, I believe, that were being discussed earlier. In fact, I received some supplemental information from Lisa Miette, who testified before you on the 15th. And these data do indicate, depending on the age group, that the for the age group, I believe it was over 30. I'm sorry for jumping to another paper here. Well, these are among riders 21 or older. There are a certain number of cases, and the average acute care cost was $34,000 in those cases. I know in my son's case, the hospital cost was $100,000+. So those even sound low to me, but that's average cost for all cases. And my son's was a significant injury. So the cost is inevitably going to shift to some degree to the public sector. We're now in a situation where the governor's recommended budget is proposing cuts in the Oregon Health Plan and in Medicaid home and community-based waiver. Those are sources of long-term support for people with severe disabilities, including traumatic brain injury or brain injury. And in the face of those kinds of cuts, where we're reducing our capability to take care of people long-term, it seems counterintuitive to weaken a program that we believe the data show prevent long-term injuries. And I certainly yield to the point that's been made earlier that motorcycles are not a huge cause of long-term disability. I mean, the numbers, automobile accidents and falls are significant in terms of the numbers of cases of brain injury. But, I mean, I'm sorry, our position is, if we're going to do anything, let's do something to strengthen prevention in other areas rather than weaken it in this area.
Thank you. You've run out of time.
I have.
questions.
Didn't learn a thing, did I?
Questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Christine Chin Ryan and then Ken Ray is on deck. Welcome.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Christine Chin Ryan. I live east of Sandy in Clackamas County, and I'm a CEO of a software consulting firm in the Lloyd District. My firm, Synergy Consulting, Inc., has been a high-tech employer in Portland for over 17 years. I want to thank you for scheduling this evening hearing. I appreciate your effort to accommodate all of us who wish to testify. I do not own a motorcycle, but I do tour with my husband, Pat, virtually every summer. We traveled all over the West, including Oregon, Washington, Canada, and California. Some of the best runs, however, have been in New Mexico, Colorado, South Dakota, and Minnesota, where adults retain freedom of choice regarding motorcycle apparel. During our 26 years together, my husband has always set safety standards for our trips together. We wear full leathers and work boots at all times. In the summer, this can reduce the danger of heat stroke and also can provide protection from skin abrasion in the event of an accident. We wear helmets when warranted by weather, road, and traffic conditions. When appropriate, we ride without helmets, decreasing back and neck fatigue and increasing our ability to enjoy the scenery of the American West. As an entrepreneur, I know that in any endeavor, the ability to act independently maximizes my effectiveness. When warranted, I consult with people who can bring new skill sets or fresh perspectives to ongoing projects. As a successful business person and a mature adult, I have sometimes found state regulation to be a bit of a burden. Consultation, education, and advice are all appropriate roles for government. And in fact, I currently sit on the Governor's Small Business Council, a group that makes policy recommendations to the state's executive office. The state does set appropriate rules for treatment of employees, and I mostly applaud those efforts to protect Oregon citizens. This protection becomes intrusive when the state assumes the responsibility of protecting me from myself. I feel that I am best qualified to make decisions that primarily affect my own well-being. My husband has carried full insurance coverage with a firm out of Iowa for decades. Due to his safety record, he pays around $307 a year. His fellow policyholders are the members of his risk pool. Our opponents argue that a prolonged hospital stay could exhaust our insurance benefits and that we would then become a burden on the state. Although statistically rare, that's true for both motorcycle riders and automobile drivers. And the studies that they cite show little difference between the burden incurred by the two groups. During the past couple of decades, the demographics of motorcycle riders have changed. The average rider is more affluent and older than was the case in the past. Oregon Bikers have created and staffed rider training courses in cooperation with ODOT. I've taken the beginning rider's course myself and found it to be very comprehensive and professional. This is another example of our community's commitment to best practices. In conclusion, I'd like to ask you to please let those who ride decide. Thank you for your time and go ngay fa choy.
Thank you. Wait, are there questions, Representative Sumner?
Sure. I got to know, what does Gung Hei Fat Choi mean?
Well, Happy New Year. It's Chinese New Year.
I just wanted to prove we were reading this.
One more question here.
If I could ask just a couple questions. In making a comparison between cars and motorcycle accidents and long-term care, a couple questions. How does this differ, do you think, in terms of requiring people who drive cars to wear seatbelts, since that is a safety measure that is proven to keep people out of long-term care type situations from accidents?
I'm not sure if I can answer that question.
All right. In terms of long-term care insurance, as a motorcycle enthusiast, if there was a requirement for motorcyclists to carry long-term care insurance, would that be a compromise that you personally would feel is a legitimate compromise, or would you feel that discriminatory because other activities in daily life are not required to cover long-term insurance?
Personally, and not speaking for other motorcycle riders, I have insurance up the wazoo, so I have no problems carrying that. I myself are very responsible. I want to make sure we're all taken care of. I've checked with my insurance company if we're covered, outside of my husband's motorcycle insurance, and yes, we are. I do have $1 million umbrella policy, which I don't know if it's covered in medical. So as far as for me personally and for my husband, we want to be responsible, citizens, and we do what it takes.
Thank you very much.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming down. Bob Avery.
Oh.
No? No. And on deck is Bill.
Oh, did you skip me?
No. Did I? Oh, I did. Ken. I'm sorry, Bob.
Bob can go first.
Nope. I'm sorry, Ken. I did that. Okay. I checked wrong. You can both sit there together.
We can. We can.
And we'll take Ken first and then Bob. I'm so sorry.
Well,
check before I should.
I'm going to ask one indulgence, which is that I'm the director of Bike Pack of Oregon. We are the group that asked for the sponsorship of this bill.
Mm-hmm.
And
Ken,
I do have
repeat
a lot
your
of
name?
Information, so I'm going to ask for some indulgence on time. I will try to be brief.
Will you repeat your name for the record?
Absolutely. Sorry. Ken Ray. I am executive director of Bike Pack of Oregon.
And I will indulge you with a little more time if you're speaking for a very large group here, and
yes,
because we are going to have enough time, I think.
Okay. I want to, again, as some people have, thank you for accommodating us this evening. I know myself, I was unable to make it Tuesday because I do work during the day, and I'm very grateful about that. What I'd like to talk about is the issue for us is not helmets, it's helmet laws. And that's a very important distinction. The debate often comes on how effective helmets are, whether helmets are useful, whether they're a good idea, whether they're a bad idea. That isn't what I'm here to talk about. I am strictly here to talk about the universal helmet mandate that is the condition in Oregon at this time. It's, this would be a lot easier decision if helmets worked all the time. But they don't. States that do not have helmet mandates have the same rates of deaths per registration, and accident rates as states that have universal helmet mandates. Therefore, I would argue, and many in the motorcycle rights community, which includes the American Motorcyclist Association, Motorcycle Riders Foundation, and others, have come out in a position of voluntary helmet use. The numbers that are often cited have to do with after a helmet law is passed, deaths often go down, or if a helmet law is changed to restore adult choice, that deaths will go up. And in some cases, that is true. However, that what is often not said and carefully not mentioned by some opponents of helmet freedom is that ridership increases at a much higher rate, or at least an equal rate, as does the death rate. In other words, we've all heard the saying that you're more likely to get involved in an accident near your home than elsewhere. Well, yeah, you're there more often. Your exposure is greater. So it is more likely that you're going to be involved in an accident when you have a higher exposure. If motorcycles are being used more often, more miles traveled, there's more registrations, then yes, there's likely to be more gross numbers of fatalities. However, the rate of accidents does not seem to increase. And I do have a lot of information here, which I'm not going to try to go through all of that, but there's a study that says university study dispels social burden theory. Unfortunately, there has not been a comprehensive national-based study done on motorcycle safety ever. The most comprehensive study we have was done strictly in California. It's usually called the Hurt Report. It's about 30 years old. It's wonderful. Got a lot of great data in it. It's 30 years old. Despite what's been said, there has been no national study by NHTSA. They often respond with statistics, but we are in the process, if I say we motorcyclists, of getting a national study done. But, you know, funding's always tight. I'm sorry, I'm just coming over a cold. So that has not happened. However, this study was done by University of North Carolina, and it was the most recent regional study. It involves states with mandatory helmet laws that are universal mandates and states that have either adult choice or complete freedom of choice. Interestingly, on about page 3, Oregon, fatalities per 100 accidents is 6.5. Unfortunately, this is from 1993. That's when the study was done. I wish there was a newer study. Vermont, 10. They're the two highest states. Well, they're mountainous states. I guess that makes sense. They're a fairly small population state, so one or two fatalities can really skew the numbers. But you look at the states that have, which is Table 7, that starts on that page and then goes on, states that neighbor us, like Idaho, Montana, they have similar rates. Well, mountainous states, lots of curves. What you'll find at the very back of it is that when you, it's the second page from the end, fatalities per 100 accident, 2.98 in states with universal helmet use, 2.9 in states with voluntary helmet use. There is basically the same fatalities per 100 accidents in states regardless of their helmet mandate. And what's interesting is, what does this show or what does it not show? Well, what it doesn't show is that helmet laws are effective in reducing the death rate. There's another study I meant to bring. I'll bring it at some point. The Harborview study is usually cited to talk about how many motorcyclists are using public assets, and the number in the Harborview study was right around 63%. Also not mentioned is that the general public at large was around 67%. So, again, motorcyclists are not any different than any other group of general population. I want to give credit to ODOT for focusing on training, as we do believe that's what really works. Lastly, some quick statistics, some of which are taken from ODOT's transportation safety plan. But the important thing is, the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, we can see that since our helmet law was universally enacted, there's about three times as many motorcycles sold, and nationwide the trend is up quite a bit, and you've all heard that. In Oregon, we've seen a great results from training, and what we are seeing, unfortunately, is that alcohol-involved accidents in 2002 was 53.6%. That's a problem. We're also seeing that 14.3% of motorcycle fatalities were non-endorsed motorcyclists. And this is from ODOT's transportation safety plan. In other words, that means that 67.9% of all fatalities are people who had no business being on a motorcycle. But yet I'm being judged as myself as a careful rider by that. I included some information from Florida, both the because Florida was one of the most recent states to amend their helmet law. Pennsylvania also. Unfortunately, there is no data from Pennsylvania. I have an email from PennDOT stating that they will not have numbers before June. But in Florida, the registrations jumped immediately afterwards, 40,000 new motorcycles. And there is an analysis which is not from a government agency, but from a motorcycle rights group such as Bike Path, but the Florida one, pointing out the economic impact of 40,000 new motorcycle sales. They have sales tax there, so that was $24 million that added to their tax revenue. Here we would have new jobs and hopefully income tax revenue from that. But in every state where motorcycling...
You're way over time.
Okay. I appreciate your choices, and I will close by saying that society does have to carry the burden of all kinds of lifestyle choices. My dad was diagnosed with emphysema and diabetes, went on Medicaid. Those were lifestyle choices he made, unfortunately, from smoking and poor diet. Society has to bear the cost of that, and it's unfortunate that we are lumped into that, but because we are such a small percentage, I ask that you restore the adult choice in Oregon.
Question.
I
don't have
to answer any questions, yeah. But I need to drink first here.
Sure. Mr. Ray. Yeah, you make a lot of great points. I don't think anyone, I don't want to speak for other people, but nobody's against training. I mean, I think it's great. I think we need to train drivers, as a person who's ridden a motorcycle, we need to train drivers to be aware that motorcyclists are on the road legally, and you need to turn around. I have yet to see a motorcyclist on a cell phone while they're riding. So, but that's a whole different story. Having said that, I want to ask a question that I asked on Tuesday, sure. Which was sort of the what's magic about the age of 21.
Well, that's a very good point, and I don't have a good answer for you, but society seems, Madam Chair, Representative Galizio, the society seems to have arrived at that number for a great many things, whether it's alcohol use or many other items. My personal opinion is it's an arbitrary number in that I personally am of the feeling that 18 is the age where you can serve your country and vote, so that would be a more natural age for me. But 21 is a compromise we came to because pragmatics are that that's probably what will get passed. 18 will not get passed. But what age would a person decide that you can make lifestyle decisions for yourself? And society's pretty much decided that's 21 at this point in time.
Can I follow up?
Well, maybe.
That's also a big area of discussion. You know, to what extent is this strictly an individual decision? The last time I got in my car, I noticed that there were many, many other vehicles. I wish I were like that car, those car commercials that I see, or those motorcycle commercials I see. I was the only one on the road, but I think it's quite a social activity. But having said that, I think when you, I remember it wasn't that long ago when I was 21, 22, 23, and I had a sport bike and it could go very fast and I loved it and it was a lot of fun. Didn't have as much riding experience, but would not be amenable to if it were an age something 30 or 5 years of riding experience or something along those lines. I mean, you're talking about 18. I don't even know. I was looking the other way. I was looking, because I'm looking in this audience, and some of you are probably in your 20s. You, sir. Would you be amenable to 30, 10 years driving, riding experience or something like that?
I can speak for both myself and for Bike Pack on that, because this discussion has come up. For myself, I will say that I would ask, and I'm not trying to be argumentative, but again, what age would you decide that a person is okay with making their own decisions? If it's 25, then it's 25. If it's 30, then it's 30. But as a citizen, I'm not just interested in this for myself. I'm interested in it for everybody, not just to benefit the people in this room. 21 is a reasonable age that has been determined to be an age where you can make a lifestyle decision that involves alcohol. Certainly something has far more implications than your choice of mode of transportation. So I do not feel that any compromise on that. This is already, in my mind, a compromise, but from BikePak's perspective, we've decided that 21 is a reasonable age. Some states, Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois, have no age restriction at all. As soon as you can get on a bike, you can ride free. But, and they're also very safe states to ride in. But in this state, the trend seems to be that we think 21 is the age when you can reasonably make adult decisions, and that's the age that we would stick with.
Thank you.
Have I answered that adequately?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Any further questions, if you can? All right, Bob. And on deck is Bill Segrist or Segrist?
Chairman Berger, members of the committee, my name is Bob Avery, and I'm from Junction City, Oregon. I'm Chief of Staff for Representative Bruce Hanna, and I'm here both on his behalf as well as myself. I've owned and operated several small businesses here in Oregon and in other parts of the country, and in addition to my work here in the legislature. I've been riding motorcycles for over 30 years, and Representative Hanna also rides. I'm asking for your support on 2488. I'm not going to go through all of my testimony. I just want to hit the highlights. I think you've seen, and you see by the crowd that came out tonight, that we're passionate. As motorcyclists, we're passionate about what we're doing. And what I didn't say in here, you know, it's about that freedom. And I think to answer a question that the good representative asked earlier, every time, the burden of the helmet is every time we get on our motorcycle, we're reminded that somebody else is telling us what to do. And they're telling us to do something that we don't have the solid founded, you know, there's an argument out there on whether, in fact, it really works or doesn't work. We see, it as Ken testified, we see that the voluntary helmet use states are virtually the same statistics as the mandatory helmet use states. So I've got a bunch of people that are not affected by wearing a helmet or not, telling me whether to wear that helmet or not, and that's part of the passion of this whole thing. If we weren't very passionate people, we wouldn't be riding motorcycles on the street in this country today. That's a key point there. I think Ken hit the perceived burden pretty well. One of the things, the doctor mentioned the reductions of and we've seen in ODOT's testimony and some of those, very commonly, and what I really want to emphasize, Ken did a pretty good job of it, is the helmet doesn't stop the accident. We've seen a great reduction in the fatalities because there's less accidents. If there's less accidents, there's likely to be less fatalities. When you look at the fatalities per accident, that number of fatalities per 100 accidents, here in Oregon, we've got a dismal track record. But prior to the implementation of the mandatory helmet law, there were 4.6 fatalities per 100 accidents. Now, today, the average is 6.7 fatalities per 100 accidents. And if you look in the information that I understand ODOT provided earlier, in recent years it's been even higher, something in the 7.5 to 8 fatalities per 100. So we're kind of asking why, if there's no, the other states are showing that there's no great increase in the number of fatalities per accident when we go to adult choice. In fact, here in Oregon, we've gone the other way when we implemented a mandatory helmet law. Why are we continuing to ask that? As Ken said, there's very few studies that are really done on the overall effect. When I was looking into studies, commonly the test for a helmet is a head form. It's not the whole body. You heard other testimony about the effects on the neck. And then there was a question brought up here today, and it's not in my testimony, but you asked about additional insurance. Personally, I feel that would be discriminatory. We don't ask people that ride a horse to have it provide additional insurance. We don't ask people that walk down the street to provide additional insurance. And there's far more head injuries from pedestrians walking down the street and slipping on the curb than riding on motorcycles. Thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Bob. Questions?
thanks for
coming. Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bob, you and I discussed this in my office, and what did I say? I didn't care if you went out and hit your head against the wall. That's up to you. But between, according to Oregon Department of Transportation, and I wish maybe you would give me your spin on this.
Sure.
Between 1968 and 76, Oregon did have a helmet law. And the average was 38 motorcyclists died each year. Now, these are people that just didn't make it, period. Between 1977 and 87, Oregon did not have a helmet law, and the average was 68. Then in 1988, I guess we went back to a helmet law, and the average dropped 31.
Mm-hmm. What you're looking
you
at there,
that?
And I don't have, I have that information and I can provide the specifics, but what happened was there was a dramatic reduction in the number of accidents after the mandatory helmet law was put into effect. And I believe a couple of years ago when this bill was heard, Representative Cruz at the time said, gave testimony, or actually a floor speech, that he's probably one of the reasons why those numbers went down. When the mandatory helmet law came into effect, he said the heck with it, and he stopped riding. And if Oregon believes that we should tell people what to do in that case and restrict our freedoms to that effect, that we chase people away from the sport, then so be it. That's the decision of Oregon. I don't think that that's a fair burden to put on the people that ride motorcycles. But am I clear on that? I think when I've looked at the facts, you'll see that you're talking about the number of fatalities, the average number of fatalities overall. And yes, that's gone down, but so has the number of accidents. The number of accidents is greatly reduced, and when you look at the number of accident or fatalities per accident, that's when in that my numbers, the average of the that set time when we had that in between time when we had no mandatory helmet law, we had an average of 4.6 people died per 100 accidents. And then after, I didn't look at the prior time that you mentioned, but then after the mandatory helmet law, we had an average of 6.7 people die per every 100 accidents. And I've got a spreadsheet I can show you. I'll be happy to provide that if you desire.
No further
question answered. Representative Cameron.
Yeah, Bob, you mentioned again, and I'm all for personal choice, but also personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. You mentioned about the insurance. We don't mandate insurance on other people. Don't we mandate insurance, medical insurance, on people who drive automobiles?
We certainly do, Madam Chair, Representative. We certainly do. And insurance is mandatory in some extents for motorcycles. We don't mandate medical coverage at this point. We also, as I said, I don't have the facts with me, but I've seen the statistics for head injuries for pedestrians, and that's substantially far greater numbers, far greater social burden than motorcycles. Maybe we should start mandating insurance to walk down
the
street.
They're not driving a motor vehicle on the street.
That's true.
They're a pedestrian. These are motor vehicles on the street.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Bill Segrist. And Dana Fox is on deck. Welcome.
Good day. Thank you for hearing me out today. My name is Bill Segrist. I'm from Albany, Oregon. I'm also a member of the Sport Bikes WS group, which incorporates over 500 people in the state of Oregon that are riders. Our group has been in discussion about this helmet law and about a lot of things, and also the local group that I ride with is over 100 people, and we come to the consensus that we as adults, which most of us are over the age of 21 that ride in our group, should be able to have the decision to choose to wear a helmet. As you can see, I'm fully geared up, and I do wear a helmet every time I ride. But there are certain times where I'm in a parking lot, I want to ride over to Taco Bell, or I want to go down the street to somewhere. I don't feel that I should have to wear a helmet. And that reason for that is that, as the statistics were heard today from people, that there's so many opportunities to get hurt in society. You could get into an automobile accident and hit your head against a windshield and have the same type of injury you can on a motorcycle. and you take in consideration how many people have that happen each year in motor vehicles, but yet they're not wearing helmets inside of a vehicle. But yet you do actually come in contact with the windshield, and it happens to people also. So overall, I think that people can make decisions for themselves after, 21 years of age, you can own a firearm. If you can own a firearm and make the decision when and when not to pull a trigger, then you should be able to make a logical decision when and when not to wear a motorcycle helmet. I mean, if you're giving that much power to somebody to make that decision with something that so drastically can affect other people, why would you not give them the opportunity to make a decision when it was appropriate and not appropriate to wear a helmet? That's the only thing that we've looked at, thinking that why are we not given this opportunity? At least give us an opportunity to try. If it doesn't work, we can always put it back.
Questions?
Just one question.
Okay.
Bill, can I ask you the same question I asked the previous witness? In your opinion, how does this differ than requiring automobile drivers to wear seatbelts? We're adults when we drive our cars. Shouldn't we have the choice to not wear a seatbelt?
I think, honestly, in the perspective of that, a seatbelt does, and it's statistically shown to help. A helmet has not statistically shown overall to help people. And also, depends on in this perspective of a vehicle. Even though you have a seatbelt, seatbelts have caused injuries to people, too. Mm-hmm. They've caused chest injuries when it was a small accident. They've also not worked or failed and caused more injury. They've also had an obstruction between the airbag and the seatbelt and the person and caused injury. They've also deflected from the seatbelt and hit the windshield. So there's lots of pros and cons to everything. But all comes down to is personal decision. When is it appropriate to do this? When is it not appropriate to do that? And we all make decisions every day in our lives. Is it appropriate to throw a rock through somebody's window because they were mad and they're playing their stereo too loud? No. Is it appropriate to fire a gun upon somebody because you're mad at them as you're driving down the road? No. These are all decisions that we make daily as human beings. And as myself, as a logical human being, think that I try to make the best decisions as possible. And I think most people do also. I can't speak for everybody, but I think that given the chance, they'll make the appropriate decision that this is the time I should wear a helmet. This is probably not the best time to not. Or, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't wear it. I'm just going 5 miles an hour across the parking lot. But I think that we as citizens of Oregon should have that right to make that decision.
Thank you.
Further questions? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Dana Fox and then Chris Rawson on deck.
Oh.
Thank you.
My name is Dana Fox. Thank you, everyone. I rode up here from Albany. I would have been out here last Tuesday, but I had to work. I ride a sport bike, as you can probably tell, and so does he and so some other people. I'm a part of the same online forum, sportbikes.ws, as a lot of these guys are. My name is Fox Fernal on the board. I'm a 29-year-old professional log truck driver. I ride motorcycles. I've got all my endorsements. That set aside, I think adding the fact that you need some sort of special insurance as far as health wise to help this helmet issue out, I'm totally okay with that. There's been a debate that insurance rates are going to raise, if the helmets are becoming optional. I don't have a problem with paying $2 or $3 extra a month just for the freedom to be able to wear a helmet or not. I'm going to hit on lane splitting a little bit briefly. When I was in California, I know this is not the issue, but I think lane splitting in California is a very good thing. I was just down there very recently, and it actually, by me splitting lanes, actually prevented me from being in over 3 wrecks I can think of. Hearing brakes and stuff and looking behind me, being able to legally know I can go down the side of the road.
Mr. Rossum, you want to explain lane splitting to those of us who...
Lane splitting, good example, Los Angeles, California. There's about 8 lanes on I-5 alone that I know of. Lane splitting is when a motorcyclist can go between cars in the lane.
Okay, got it. Okay. I knew that was possible in Oregon. Oh, sure. I mean, California.
I think it's a good thing.
Is it legal?
It is.
Oh, it certainly is. Yeah, I'm not sure of the exact stipulations, but evidently, the lane splitting I did there was because I saw a lot of policemen on bikes as well. and they just kind of gave me a wave. So evidently I was doing something right. Around town, during cruise-ins and stuff, I think it's beneficial for someone not to wear a helmet. Again, it's their own decision. I hop on my sport bike. Even if this thing does go through and it becomes optional, I'm still going to ride my motorcycle helmet. Just because of the nature of the beast I ride, they're kind of a different thing than some of the cruisers. However, I have a lot of respect for Harley riders, and I used to have a few cruisers myself. They're all fun. But I think as far as the around town cruisings and stuff goes, under 15 miles an hour, I think it's actually safer not to have the helmet on because of what someone mentioned earlier was the safety issue, concerning being able to visibly see what's going on and hear what's going on around you, as well as your bike, how it's running. It's nice to know if you've got a chatter or a clank or something going on. I was riding in Florida in 2001, Bike Week, Daytona Bike Week, and while I was there during the Bike Week, that's the biggest motorcycle event in the world. While I was there, they passed the helmet law to, I guess helmet law passing would be an optional. I don't know what the heck it is. Anyways, it became optional for people to wear helmets. And I saw more thumbs up and thumbs down from the local police departments and the riders as well. I thought that was a great thing. However, I didn't take my helmet off because of that. Because of the nature of the beast of bike I ride, that's totally set aside. I had two cousins that died, I think, because of helmets. I personally witnessed both of them dying at the same time. An SUV, I think someone mentioned earlier, SUVs not to defame SUVs. I like them, I personally watched two of my cousins die because they had, I personally think that one of them definitely, because they had a helmet on, they hit the corner of the SUV and twisted the head sideways, and they're basically like an owl looking backwards. There's no telling what would have happened if they wouldn't have had their helmet on. I personally think it would have busted their jaw and probably had some reconstructive surgery done to their face, but I think they would have been alive here, and they'd have probably been sitting next to me. I don't know.
Your time is getting...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Time flies when you're having fun. I think this is great. I'm glad I was able to make it up here, actually. I think I speak to a lot of people on this behalf. On the racetrack, I think a helmet is a great thing. In fact, most racetracks that I know of won't even allow you anywhere near without your legitimate license and a helmet. And I think that's great. What else we got here? I've got a lot of things.
You're at the hook, but I have a couple of questions.
Yes, please do, yeah.
California, I believe, allows lane splitting, but they also require a helmet. Am I correct in that?
I do think they require it, yes.
Yes. And just for my information, you want to give us a very brief explanation of the difference between a sport bike, a touring bike, or whatever, in just a... what a sport bike is, for instance?
A sport bike is different from a Harley. And what are you sneaking at?
I asked him this question, and it's a legitimate question. I don't know what a
sport bike has. Is built for speed, aerodynamics. Everything on them is high performance. There's a lot of carbon fiber, lightweight parts on them.
As opposed to a touring bike.
The weight distribution is a lot.
So it's
different.
A fast bike. It's like a sports car.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I get the idea.
Okay, I can go on and on. But
I know. Clearly, you have a passion for it.
Oh, I
Further questions from committee members.
Madam Chair, would you like a ride?
I'll give you a ride any time. You can even decide if you want to wear your helmet or not.
I see. Thank you. Thank you for coming, and thank you for your testimony. If there's no further questions, we've got Chris Rawson and Richard Below, if I'm close, is on deck. Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening. I want to thank the chair for calling this meeting. It allowed me to come down and testify when I normally couldn't. As you can see, I came straight from work. Wanted to address a couple issues that came up. I have my insurance card in my hand, and I ride a performance scooter, and I don't want to go into it what it is, but PIP insurance is not required for motorcycles. I believe we spoke here today, there's no equality between cars and motorcycles when it comes to insurance. A little bit about myself. I'm a Portland State University student. I'll be graduating on June 11th. I graduated from Team Oregon, so that's how I got my motorcycle license. I also started a group called the Portland Motorcycle and Scooter Coalition. I recently was riding a scooter. I talked to my insurance agent, and he says, yes, you can get PIP insurance, but it's not the same. It's $10,000 and not $15,000. I believe I have the distinction of having the most recent accident. On January 14th, I was riding my scooter. A Honda Accord, one of the smaller vehicles out there, turned left in front of me. I was catapulted off my scooter and onto the pavement. I didn't have any medical insurance that would cover me. I declined to go to the hospital that night. Now, why is it if I'm driving a car, I can get medical insurance, but if I'm driving a motorcycle, I can't? And what I'm saying to the committee here is something to address. A helmet is not a catch-all for all the bad things that we've legislated at this point. I believe it's important to have the same medical insurance for motorcycles and cars. If the number is 36,000, we can do 36,000. If it's less, we can do less. Second thing is, riding on the road alone. In Portland, which of course most people think is the center of the universe, I would like to argue that if you've been outside of Portland, there are many roads that are simply uninhabited. I've seen many motorcycle videos where you are the only person on the road. There is no cars. You may see one every 10 minutes. Conversely, you're able to have a little bit of freedom, so to speak. So there are a lot of opportunities to ride by yourself, and I applaud the ladies and gentlemen here who say, we don't have a problem except when cars hit us. And that's what happened to me. The fourth thing here is parade rides. Now, I understand it is a big step to go from a helmeted society to a non-helmeted, but let's look at something like this. Every parade we go to has ambulances, do they not? Why don't we start small and say, on ambulance rides, you don't have to wear helmets? And I can provide examples of when the police, given their tough jobs, will sometimes perhaps discipline certain groups over others. It'd be great if the body would say, on parade rides, where you're going 15 miles an hour, you don't need to wear a helmet that would possibly dehydrate you. On the final thing, all we're asking today is a due pass from the committee to simply let this go out into the House of Representatives and let the full body vote on this bill. I believe this is a great bill, and I'm 100% for it. That's all I have to say today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For coming. Questions? Representative Buckley.
Chris, just a comment, helmeted or not, some of the roads you're talking about that are empty and free are in Jackson County, and I encourage you all to come down and check out.
Thank you, Representative. Mm-hmm. Portland, the center of the universe, is not going to go very far in this. I would also tell all of you that this committee will not be, by rule, we will not be voting tonight. This is an opportunity for public hearing only. So if you're expecting that at the end, please, we have not notified for a vote, and we will not be voting this evening. Any other questions? Thank you very much for coming down from the center of the universe. And Richard Below, okay. But thank you for coming. Dave?
Is Gangline.
Gangsline. I apologize. I don't have my glasses on. And Terry Quiry is on deck, and that is the end. So anybody else who wants to can go over and sign up. Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you also for having this forum at this time of night, because it allows many of my colleagues an opportunity to voice their opinions.
And you need to repeat your name for the record.
Dave Gangsline.
Thank you.
I've been riding for 35 years. I'm still alive. That should say something right there. In 1997, when Governor Kitzhaber vetoed the repeal of the motorcycle helmet law and labeled all Oregon motorcyclists an indigent public burden. That was my clarion call to action. I became active in the Democratic Party as a precinct committee person. I worked my way up as now I am a member of the executive committee of the Democratic Party of Oregon. And several, a number of my colleagues and constituents in this room formed the Motorcyclist Caucus of the Democratic Party of Oregon because we feel so passionately about our freedom of choice and our right to choose. And it's the fact that it is eroding and for all the wrong reasons. You've heard more facts and figures than I can ever quote, but I tell you what, I never thought I'd ever see my name on a ballot, much less even at one point running for now House District 45 in 2001 when Joanne Bowman stepped down. That takes a lot, and you have to feel pretty strongly about something in order to step into the political arena, because you all know you started at one time, it can be a pretty scary place. So if we feel that strongly about this issue, you know, I certainly hope that you can obviously give this a due pass, and please do your best to lobby if you can in our behalf with your fellow House members. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming. Are there any questions? Thank you. Yeah, it is scary to run for office.
No.
Ask us. And Terry...
Just get appointed, right?
Inquiry.
I don't know. That's
hastily written notes.
I'm Terry Quiring from Salem, and I've been writing most of my life. I'm for Bill HB 2488. I've heard statistics on the head injuries and accidents on motorcycles, and I've also heard and seen statistics on head injuries in automobiles. It seems we could dramatically lower auto deaths by also installing a helmet law. Might as well do it. Save lots of head injuries in automobiles. Uncomfortable, the gentleman was mentioning that what about a helmet would be, why would you not want to wear it? I guess I would ask all of you the same thing. In a car, how comfortable would you be with your helmet on? Your head would be much more protected in a serious automobile accident if you wore that helmet, as I hear. It also appears by some testimony tonight that we could eliminate a lot more in medical payouts by doing so, helmet law in automobiles. Now, if you were given no choice but to wear a helmet and drive in your car, would you vote for this law? Now, I used to make my own decisions on the depending on the type of ride and conditions on where I'd wear my helmet or not. I personally always take it with me in case the conditions would change, to have it with me if something were to take place, and I felt more comfortable with it on in the changing conditions. I feel it makes more sense, and we've discussed it tonight, for safety education for the new riders, balancing it out, given mature riders, experienced riders, an option to wear the helmet or not. We've heard this a lot tonight. People that are fresh on motorcycles, haven't had the experience on two wheels, they need some protection. I believe that a helmet law for them up to a certain age, and it's, I can't tell you if 21 or 18 or 25 makes a difference. I believe when I was 21, I think I had a better understanding of the motorcycle I was riding, felt more comfortable without a helmet on. If we're going to have to impose a rule, we should protect probably inexperience more than the experience. In finishing, I'll be all done here. Also had heard some testimony earlier in insurance issues about a large amount of these accidents that take place on motorcycles that the riders were without medical coverage. I know this isn't a forum for everybody raising their hands, but I think I would probably assume that most every motorcycle rider in this room, or near most of them, have got medical insurance. I didn't understand what that testimony was that the lady gave. But I've never ridden without medical coverage, and I wouldn't put a burden on the state if I were to put myself in an accident, and I don't think most of the people in this room are riding without it either. And that's all.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you for coming. We've got a couple more sign up. Larry Brow.
You're getting good with that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, distinguished gentlemen, I'm the...
Your name first, Larry.
My name is Larry Brown. I'm the coordinator for Columbia River Chapter in Portland, Oregon. I've been riding since I was 13 years old, and usually most of the riding that I did was out in the rural areas and jumping stumps, and like most of us started out when we were kids, you know, on little rice grinders and going out there and beating them up. The times that I put on the motorcycle are probably the best I've ever had. The thing that just irks me about this helmet law is it's like you were saying, sir, Mr. Buckley, that would we wear our helmets, or would we have the ability to make the right decisions? It's the same thing with wearing a seatbelt in a car. You're making reference to the seatbelt law. Seatbelts are incorporated into the car. They're made with, you pay for it when you buy the car. Mm-hmm. When you buy a motorcycle, they don't give you a helmet. Not one manufacturer in this country will give you a helmet when you buy a motorcycle. That's optional equipment. If they did give you a helmet, then I would say that it's a standard. Wouldn't you? It's not. If it's personal choices, and we all make them every day, then it should be a personal choice to wear one or not. I've been riding for a long time. I ride a 2002 VTX, big bike, weighs 800 pounds. I have no qualms about the fact that when a car goes up against a motorcycle, you're going to lose. The only thing that keeps us from getting hurt, from killed, from brain injuries, is education. Team Oregon is the most fantastic thing we've ever come up with. These people put out so much effort, and they really do care. All I'm asking is you to care the same. Give us the right to decide. We'll make the right choices. We always have. I mean, when you said we have to wear them, we put them on. It's down in Arizona. I was riding down there. They have a right to choice. You go down in Phoenix, you see more helmets on those people's heads in town because they make the choice. And they make the right one because they know that they're in a situation where they could get knocked down. Especially between the miles between 25 miles an hour and 45 miles an hour, the helmet works pretty good. But you get on the highway where you get up to speed, that helmet becomes a detriment. You hit the ground with that, it's extra 5 pounds on your head that's slamming down. It doesn't do anything for you except for break things that aren't supposed to be broken. And in my opinion, this is my opinion, I don't have statistics for it, but every time I've gone down, that's not the part that hurts me the most, it's the broken bones. You know, and I wear body armor and coats. I mean, I have my own personal protection. I make these choices on my own to wear these things. But if I was on the highway, on the freeway, going down the road, I want to be able to hear that car that's going to come up alongside of me. Or when I'm passing a car that's too slow. They aren't seeing us. That's where the danger comes from. It's not the helmet on our head. Unaware motors surround us. In education, we do things in ABATE that you don't all see all the time. We go out to high schools. We educate kids in driver's ed classes. We're dedicated. I think most people who ride a motorcycle have a personal expense that they put out $20,000 for a piece of equipment. I pay $1,000 a year. I don't have any tickets, no moving violations. But yet I pay the extra amount for my own personal safety. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions, Mr. Brown? Thank you for coming. And thank you for telling us your story. We have one left. Cleanup. Is it Jim?
That's me.
Is it Jones?
That's me.
I'm pretty good. I'm getting either better or worse. Thank you very much.
I'll sit down first. I'm Jim Jones, and I'm from Myrtle Creek, Oregon. Oh. I came up tonight because I heard that this was going on, and I thought I'd come up, and I was just going to listen. But I was listening to all these people, and they made passionate pleas, and I applaud them for it. But one thing they did not bring up is the helmet itself. How strong is that helmet when you're charging down the road at 65 miles an hour, that's legal speed, and you hit something? That helmet's not going to help you a bit. That man knows right there. He's shaking his head. 15 miles an hour is what the helmet is made for. And I'm talking full face because that's what I wear. These little patches that they put on their heads, that's not going to help you. But it's legal by your law. Your law. I think that somebody should rethink the law and let the people who ride the motorcycles say what they want to do. That's all I got to say. Any questions? Any?
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Representative Galizio.
For the record, some of us weren't here when some of the previous laws were made. So don't pin that on all of us. So.
No, I don't blame people for previous laws.
Okay.
But I just blame them for laws that they leave standing.
Yeah. Well, can I actually have a question? Mr. John, I wonder, to what extent do you think this has become just a kind of a symbolic debate? In other words, I as someone who's ridden a motorcycle, I don't currently, but I plan to in the not too distant future, I hope, if I can get a little bit more money and other priorities. But I always am very frustrated because a lot of people cannot drive their automobiles very well. They don't understand their equipment. They're on their cell phone. And the motorcyclists that I know are quite the opposite, because you're aware, because you know it's dangerous, and you're right there. You're not, you know, looking around.
Well, I'm 68 and a half years old.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
I've been there a while.
But to what extent do you think this is, you know, as you said, the helmets that you just, you know, and a lot of people who ride kind of cruising bikes, it's just a little thing on your head. I don't know that's going to do much. Do you think this has just become a symbolic debate? In other words, people are frustrated, not so much specifically the helmet law, but it's just become this kind of symbol of it's, well, you know, freedom versus...
If you were in California a long time ago, they said you had to have a rear-view mirror. So what did the people do? They got dentist mirrors, and they stuck them out there. That was legal, but they didn't do no good unless you stuck them in your mouth. I sure as hell wouldn't do that. But I think it's like I bought a Harley Davidson helmet. Yeah, the Jackdaw, you know, the kind that breaks and you can lift it up, and you've got glasses, you can put it over there. If you drop that helmet from, say, this height, $300 helmet, it's no good. You've already lost your helmet. But nobody's going to pay for me another $300 helmet, so I have to go out and get another one. And if I choose to wear that helmet, nobody knows if I dropped it or not. There's no thing on there that says it's been dropped. The only thing you're going to see is a bunch of cracks and maybe my head gone, but that's all. But the helmet itself is just a liability. Now, that's your joke right there. The helmet itself. Now, if they had full body armor, and you know, I'm talking like they use over there, I'd go along with it maybe. But as I wear my helmet for the bugs.
You wear it because it's
big bugs.
And it's the law, but the bugs are what it's there for.
Okay. And further questions? Thank you. Thank you very much for coming.
But all right. And thank you for listening.
A couple of things. The helmet law was enacted as a vote of the people, a reminder of that, and that is a serious matter in the state of Oregon. Are there any closing comments from members of the committee? Anything that any of you feel compelled to state? And that there being negatives around there, let me speak for this committee. Really appreciate the time and the trouble that you've taken to come and tell us your stories and how you feel about this. This is the heart of our democracy. We will read your material. We will take your opinions seriously. This is something that's come up before, as you well know, in the legislative venue, and no matter what happens with this bill, it will come up again. We are appreciative that it is a serious matter, and I'm sure that the folks, the bike pack and abate, the folks that will be following this will let you know if there's any further action or further things that transpire in this. But know that we are here at attention to you because we believe that it's important that we have your time be our time. That's why we're here this evening. And so I will send you off on your motorcycles or your cars with our best wishes, and thank you for you coming to tell us what you want us to know. And with that, I will close this public hearing on House Bill 2488. Yes.